morning. My name is Michael McCusker. Happy Columbus Day, 531. Just as we commemorate the great admiral of the ocean sea, anthropologists in New Mexico discover human footprints in White Sands National Park in New Mexico that date back perhaps 12,000 to 23,000 years ago, which makes them some of the oldest tracks yet of people in the Americas at the height of the last glacial age. Human history has been scampering all over Gaia for hundreds of millennia without record other than generations of myth and a few footprints. Before Columbus were the Viking explorations of Upper East Coast North America. The Chinese record vast ocean fleets of exploration millennia earlier. Medieval Irish monks crossed the Atlantic in cockle shells. And, of course, the Polynesians spread over the Pacific Ocean, and most likely, as Thor Heyerdahl speculated with his famous raft, Kon-Tiki, an opposite theory of human surge across the Pacific from Peru, South America. We do get around. It's something I wrote now. Hello, Columbus, for this Columbus Day. On Friday, October 12th, 1492, a Genoa sailor stumbled onto the Western Hemisphere while seeking passage to the Far East. One world was born that day, but the world that was discovered began that instant to die. Christopher Columbus missed his mark by half a world, and by that doubled the world's size. The old civilizations of Europe sent their most favored and dumped their least on the shores of the New World, though they were equals in their fervent obliteration of the New World's civilizations, regarding them as primitive and pagan. Unknown at first to the Europeans, who sought wealth with murderous decimation of the native peoples they initially encountered, were great civilizations as autocratic, expansive, and cruel as their own. A few matched and exceeded the European cultures that were themselves recovering from prolonged regression following the dissolution of classical empires. A renaissance of European civilization, a rebirth of classical knowledge, culminated in the calamitous error of Columbus, who refused to believe that he had blundered upon an entirely unknown landmass that blocked his passage to the ancient East. And immediately he began the cruel harvest of native inhabitants that was to last nearly half a millennium. As the natives perished by millions from slaughter, forced labor, old world pestilence, and terminal despair, half of Africa, it seemed, was emptied to provide slaves for new world plantations and mineral mines. And millions of African blacks also died before even reaching the Americas. 3 centuries after Columbus, the great thinkers of the 18th century, European Enlightenment, debated the consequences of the European encroachment on the Western Hemisphere and concluded the costs had been too high for the gains. The great thinkers wished the great navigator had never set sail or had perished at sea with his 3 small ships on the ocean, though someone would have claimed discovery of the New World eventually, and many had previously made landfalls in the same hemisphere from both Atlantic and Pacific Ocean, hundreds, even thousands of years earlier, and either were uncertain or disclaimed or never returned. Chinese claims were unknown in Europe, and Columbus might himself wished he had never sailed. He died poor and in disgrace. New civilizations spawned upon the ruins of the obliterated, often deeply influenced by them, and one in particular emerged from seeds of radical ideas brought across the Atlantic Ocean from nations that spurned their believers into exile. This particular new culture was uncomfortably germinated by various peoples who had immigrated to stay, some as seekers, others as slaves. And its governance was founded on the heretical proposition that people should be free and equally citizens of the organized state. The ideal was always in conflict with reality. At times, the tension created brilliant advances in civil liberties. Most of the time, progress was slow, bloody, and, as often or not, retrogressive. The major contradictions were a long acceptance of chattel slavery and the remorseless extermination of native culture and ethnic cleansing, quote unquote, repeated in other places in more recent times. The annual observance of Columbus's first voyage to the Americas, named after a later Italian explorer who was not fooled into believing he had reached Asia, is often controversial. Some celebrate, others denounce European intrusion upon the Western Hemisphere and half a millennium of conquest, epidemic, and cultural genocide. Words of placation or condemnation are exchanged. The old world invaded, encountered, conquered, converged with the new, depending on the perspectives of the speakers. However one might feel, Columbus and his successors are as inescapable a fact as the space object that crashed into this very same Earth hemisphere and ended the long age of the dinosaurs. Columbus's voyage ended the long seclusion of early descendants of Asian prehistoric hunters who crossed over in periods when the Bering Sea was shallow and the continents were briefly connected at their northern extremities and were subsequently cut off from the rest of the human world when the waters rose again. The ancient cycles of pre-Columbian civilization disappeared under the onslaught of invaders who were oblivious of them. In the same manner, sometime in the future, the civilizations that have grown from their ruins will be devoured, deteriorate, or self-destruct. And in the words of Lafcadio Hearn, an Italian immigrant to the USA in the 19th century, who subsequently relocated to Japan and who favored the resurgence of Asia over the West, post-Columbian cultures will, quote, be as mist as the ichthyosaur, unquote. When Christopher Columbus sailed the ocean blue in 1492, he thought he would have a straight passage west around the world to India and trump the competition by opening up the riches of Asia for his employer, the newly reestablished monarchy of Spain, which had recently amputated Moorish dominance. Instead, the great navigator bumped into a hemispheric rock. And for 300 years, Europeans looked for a waterway through it, a passage west to the Far East that connected the Atlantic Ocean to the Pacific. Ever since the Christian Crusades of the 11th and 12th centuries, Europe was hungry for the silks and spices of Asia. Though the Christian hordes were greedy for pagan wealth, they were unsuccessful taking it by conquest, with a few exceptions. The Saracens, as the armies of the cross called their Arabic antagonists, once they expelled the infidels from the Holy Land, were more than happy to trade with them. Europe's gold and silver in exchange for Asia's silks and spices. For centuries, the only doors to the east from the west, and vice versa, was through the narrow Middle Sea, the Mediterranean, and the merchants of Venice, who trounced their rivals Pisa and Genoa for virtual monopoly as go-between. In the 15th century, Anno Domini, when Ottoman sultans ruled nearly all of Western Asia and Eastern Europe, including the once magnificent Byzantine Empire, the first of the great European maritime nations, Portugal, sent its small sailing ships around the southern tip of Africa to the rich seaports of India and China, and thus eliminated the Italian and Muslim middlemen. It took them nearly a century to round the Cape of Good Hope and sail into the Indian Ocean in 1498, 6 years after Columbus, the great navigator, quote unquote, collided with the Western Hemisphere, expecting Asia. Columbus, who was an unemployed mariner from Venice's rival Genoa, initially tried to convince the Portuguese that it would be easier to reach India by sailing west across the Atlantic. Spain, which had just kicked out the last of its Muslim North African conquerors and re-enfranchised its Christian Catholic medieval monarchy, was anxious for global wealth and power after 7 centuries of foreign Islamic occupation, and hired Columbus, who, as it turned out, grossly underestimated Earth's circumference and had not calculated the existence of the American continents. Spain, though disappointed that India was not so easily reached after all, built an empire on the incredible riches of American civilizations it decimated and the gold and silver it mined with the forced labor of incorrectly named Indians and black African slaves. England and France came late into the action of looting the Western Hemisphere, and though ancient rivals, each was determined to undermine the overseas colonial Spanish Empire. Each independently sought passage through North America to Asia, primarily because Spain controlled the South Atlantic. Catholic papal decree split the New World between Spain and Portugal until the former consumed the latter. But English seahawks fiercely contested Catholic sovereignty, and the great seahawk Francis Drake got through the terrifying Straits of Magellan at the bottom of South America, and after raising a great fuss, sinking Spanish ships and sacking Spanish-American settlements, sailed up the Pacific Ocean along what is now the Oregon coast, looking for the Pacific entrance to a northwest passage to Hudson's Bay and the Atlantic Ocean in 1579. How far he came up and where he came ashore to scrape his ship's barnacled hull is disputed, and almost every developer building a condo in a cove hires an historian to claim Drake landed there. Even the Nehalem River Valley is claimed to be Drake's New Albion. What is not disputed is that Drake and his crew of Elizabethan sea dogs sailed across the Pacific Ocean in a single ship, the Golden Hind, to get back home to England because fleets of angry Spanish were waiting for him on his back trail. In this manner, Drake circumnavigated the world, which the luckless Magellan paid with his life in his earlier failed attempt. 9 years later, Drake played a commanding role in wrecking a huge Spanish fleet that intended to invade Elizabethan England, called even 435 years later by sardonic Spaniards the Invincible Armada. That overwhelming English victory in August 1588 began England's long rise to world power. Along the way, it colonized and lost a strip of Atlantic seacoast in North America to rebellious colonists who declared themselves a new nation and immediately set off to grab a large share of Asia's bounty for itself, while spreading from the Atlantic coast to the Pacific coast in less than a century. Hopes for a Northwest Passage to the Pacific Ocean through North America faded over the centuries. Spain lost its supremacy, and ships from the northern European nations took the long ways around Cape Horn and Cape Hope, but a new legend replaced the discredited legend. Now there was thought to be a great river of the West, which was said to be called by native peoples the Oregon. People thought the Missouri River was navigable to the Rocky Mountains, and after a short portage over the Rockies, the Great Western River could be reached and traversed straight to the Pacific Ocean. But, like the Northwest Passage, no one could find this great river. The 18th century's most acclaimed nautical explorer, James Cook, whose expeditions were protected by agreed-upon international law, sailed past it in bad weather in 1778. Yet, though brown water he sailed through off the Northwest American coast was indicative of a major river, he declined to declare certainty of such a river. 10 years later, in 1788, another English captain, John Mears, tried to ascertain the river's existence and gave up, naming Deception Bay and Cape Disappointment to discourage others who might attempt to follow him. And George Vancouver and his English Royal Expedition was just off the mouth of this sought-after river in 1792, but was deceived, as was Mears 4 years earlier, by surf breaking across the bar. The Spanish explorer Bruno Heceta thought he had found the river in 1775, which he named the San Roque, but was unable to get in because his crew was too weak from scurvy to man their ship across the bar. In the spring of 1792, the same year Vancouver sailed past, an American captain from New England, Robert Gray, took his ship, Columbia Rediviva, through the wild surf and entered the fabled river, which he named Columbia after his vessel, and which is actually a derivative of the name of the great admiral of the ocean sea himself, Christopher Columbus. On his first voyage to the Pacific Northwest, which necessitated each time rounding Cape Horn at the bottom of South America and the perilous Straits of Magellan, named for a former luckless European explorer who was killed by native Filipinos in somewhat the same manner as Cook died in Hawaii, Captain Gray sailed into Tillamook Bay, then to China, in a ship named Lady Washington. On his second voyage, he swapped vessels with his trading partner, the colorful and luckless John Kendrick, sailing to China, then back to Boston, USA, the first American flag vessel to circumnavigate the globe. Gray then set off for the Oregon coast in the Columbia Rediviva on his next voyage and claimed discovery of the Columbia River on May 11, 1792, which would have, as a matter of note, astonished the native peoples who had lived along the river for several millennia. Gray named the river Columbia after his ship, which actually is a derivative of the name of the great admiral of the ocean sea, whose claimed discovery of the Western Hemisphere is celebrated on today's date, October 12th, 3 centuries earlier. Hail Columbia. This is Michael McCusker. Joanne Rideout continues to engineer this program. Whatever else might be happening on planet Earth, a solar eclipse will begin on Saturday as Luna passes Sol, which will create a swath of brilliant sunlight from Oregon through western USA and streak across South America. This particular form of solar eclipse is known as a Ring of Fire. Encore, Johnny Cash. Here on the coast, it will probably be just another rainy day. And now, listening to KMUN, Saturday, 26 November, 1988. And this is something I wrote. Again. A satellite broadcast on public radio featured what is certainly the last reunion of veterans of the Mexican Revolution of 1916. There were only four who were found on this side of the U.S.-Mexican border, and at least one had been a Federales. Two rode with Pancho Villa, one who had first joined the Federales in anger at the U.S. attack at Veracruz. Instead, he was sent against Villa and was captured and given a choice of changing sides or hanging. Villa promoted him to captain when he was 15. Villa's youngest daughter, now in her 70s, one of many children from Villa's many wives, and that's a quote, translated the former teenage captain, who is now 90, and another survivor who rode with Villa. Both voiced contempt for Mexico's most recent election, a hand-picked president of the single political party, and they vociferously claimed that Mexico needed a new Pancho Villa and that the country was governed by anti-revolutionaries. And the organizer of the reunion said, "There will never be another reunion of the soldiers of the Mexican Revolution." And that was from 1988, an NPR broadcast on Free Radio Pacific, KMUN-FM. Albert Smith, one of the original KMUN programmers, and a favorite of many, many people who listen to this station, has died. Truly a heartbreak for those of us who have known him for a long time. And now, a poem from my niece, Tracy McCusker. Man of Science. Man of science, tear away sentiment. This veil, brutal vigor, is much admired in your indolence. You have accomplished wonders, put into shade all exoduses, all ancient venerables swept into your conditions, profane connections over the whole surface. Daily you have been, or are being, destroyed. There is no life or death, only raw material and remotest zones.
You've been listening to A Story Told on KMUN, featuring Michael McCusker, journalist, activist, former firefighter, and Vietnam veteran. Michael has been sharing essays and poetry on A Story Told for decades on KMUN. For 30 years, he published the North Coast Times-Eagle newspaper out of his home in Astoria, Oregon. Michael currently shares his work and the works of other authors from his home on the Central Oregon coast. Join us here next week for A Story Told.